compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back and thanks for listening. One of the weirdest stories that I've seen, I mean, talk about irony. This is from 2014, so it's not a breaking story, but three people were in a flight simulator at Wichita's Mid-Continent Airport. Now, this happened again, 2014, but I ran across this story and I just thought I had to share it with you. There were three people in a flight simulator at the airport doing flight simulation testing. They were killed when an actual plane crashed into the building where the flight simulator was. It was at Wichita's Mid-Continent Airport. They died when a twin-engine Beechcraft King Air, whose pilot had also died in the crash, crashed into the flight training center just after takeoff. About 100 people were usually working in the building, and they were all accounted for. Authorities said that heavy equipment was used to search for four people who were thought to have been in another flight simulator room, but thankfully it turned out to be empty. Five people were injured in the crash. Four other people were injured and then released after being treated. But it's just the strangeness of the story. You go into a flight simulator building. I've been in one at, it's Offutt Air Force Base, just outside of Rapid City, South Dakota. And back in the day, we knew very well a couple who, the husband was a colonel in the Air Force. And he flew, at first, I think he flew B-52s as a pilot, and then he flew B-1 bombers. And then flew the B-2 bomber. No, did he flew the B? I think he just flew the B-1 bomber. And then he became like a trainer and all that. So he had access to the military flight simulators. And so we were visiting, and he said, hey, you want to go check out the flight simulator for the B-52 bomber, or the B-1 bomber? Yeah. And so I and a couple of my older boys, who were kids at the time, we went to the flight simulator. It's the most amazing thing. It's just marvelous. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It's in a room that has like an instructor desk toward the back. And then you're sitting in the pilot seat or the co-pilot seat, and you've got the entire cockpit exactly as it would be. And of course, that was all foreign to me because I'm not a pilot. And then the windows in the cockpit are all computer screens. And the most interesting thing about this was that, and we were in there for about an hour. I think you booked an hour for us. Among the interesting things was you could program anywhere in the world. And he says, now there are some places that I can't program because you're a civilian and you don't have a security clearance. So like I said, can we fly over downtown Moscow? He said, no, we can't do that. We've got some security clearance level things that you can't see, but let's go fly over some terrain in wherever. So we put it on, and it really is like being in one of these planes. And the neat thing about it was that this room was on hydraulic lifts. So if you're climbing as you're in the simulator, the room basically simulates the feeling of what it would be like in a plane as you're climbing. You feel kind of the G-forces a little bit. And it will go side to side, in front to back. It'll pitch down, pitch up. And I just thought that was amazing. So having been in one of these simulators that one time, I can only imagine how the poor people who went in to do the training in this place, you think you're absolutely safe. There's no way you can crash because you're in a simulator. And then a plane crashes into your building and kills you. It's just astonishing. And that's it. That's the whole story. But I wanted to share it with you. It's one of those oddball things. Now, here's something that I don't really enjoy sharing with you, but I feel the need to, because this is, do we have that audio ready, Cyrus? This is Dr. Lena Wen. She is the former Queen of Corpse Mountain, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood. She was the head of Planned Parenthood for a short time, and they sort of ran her off. But in any case, she's now a CNN contributor, and she's speaking here on the COVID, the requirement. Help me out here, Cyrus. What's the title? I want to give the exact title of this particular one that Lena Wen is speaking on with regard to the COVID vaccine.
Oh, you know, I had it right here. Let me scroll through. I have the title in front of me.
Yeah, here it is. The vaccine mandate.
Vaccine,
here we go.
Mandates.
The vaccine mandate. Thank you. So here's Dr. Lena Wen, previously the Queen of Corpse Mountain, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood, and she's being interviewed. She's talking about a vaccine mandate. We've heard from her before on this topic. Here's what she had to say yesterday.
But let me ask you this, Dr. Nguyen, because I remember in May when the CDC made that decision, which many people felt, when we had no idea this was coming, right? And it came. And part of the incentive for it was to incentivize more people to get vaccinated. Like, here's the reward if you get vaccinated, you can lose the mask. With 50% of the country still not vaccinated, could a result in part of this be another disincentive for people to get vaccinated? Do they need to weigh those things?
I definitely think that the Biden administration should be thinking about these things. And this is the reason why it should not just be a decision of the CDC. Part of the problem, I think, is that the Biden administration has been equating following the science with listening to one scientific institution, when actually the implication is not just about the actual data and the physical science. It's also about social science and people's behaviors and what's likely to come as a result of them. The CDC, in the first place, made the right decision when it comes to the science, but they didn't take into account human behavior. And I think there's something that there's one thing the Biden administration can be doing right now that would change the equation when it comes to incentives, and that's to use proof of vaccination. If they could say, get the vaccine, you have a proof of vaccination, you can take off your mask, that would be really key. And I also think that vaccine mandates are something that will have to come.
We've been seeing this over the horizon for quite a long time, haven't we, Cyrus? Talking about it.
I'm just curious, you know, proof of vaccine, will it be something that we have to carry around in our wallets? Is it on our phone? Do we, you know, stamp it into our forehead? Where's the universal proof of vaccine that we're going to show everybody?
Because, you know, in Israel, when they had the printed out paper that had a QR code on it, there was immediately a black market for fake QR code immunization certificates for people who could buy one but had never been vaccinated. So I'm guessing it probably won't be that. Could it be an app on your phone? Yeah, possibly. Could be an app on your phone, maybe for a time anyway. But what if you lose your phone? Or what if the app isn't working or something like that?
Maybe on our driver's license? Maybe.
Could be that.
Maybe on our IDs.
Maybe there's a little, you know, asterisk, or who knows, maybe it could be like that. Something scannable, I should think. Especially if you have a large event where many people are in attendance or trying to come in through the turnstiles and you don't have time to, like, look at individual phones.
Right, yeah, and it's going to need to be scannable.
I would think.
I would think.
How else might you do that?
I don't know. Any ideas?
I don't know.
I like where this is going.
Well, yeah, we don't know quite yet where this is all going, but we do know one thing, that I think that even though so much of what she stands for in terms of abortion and such I despise, nonetheless, as somebody who has a voice in a big voice in this field of medicine right now, I think what she's saying, even though we may disagree with it, I think she's saying that this is inevitable and there will be eventually something that will be required, a vaccine mandate. And we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, that's about all I can say. But in the meantime, things do seem to be trending steadily in that direction. So we'll keep an eye on that and we'll keep you informed. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Tom in Stuart, Florida. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
This comment is going to pertain to, and I did not hear the whole conversation, but a gentleman you were talking to, I guess something about a rainbow flag in his cubicle, and he was talking to HR.
Right.
Okay. And then what you just said about this woman, is it Julie Wang from Planned Parenthood, and her comment?
Lena Nguyen.
Well, okay. There's a quote, and this, I'm just going to repeat it, and I feel this is strong. All tyranny needs to gain a foothold is for honest men and women to do nothing. So I am in the mindset of pushing back on these things, and I personally feel that, you know, if we disagree with something, we need to definitely push back, and push back hard sometimes.
Fair enough, and that may be, there may be cases where that's the necessary thing to do. I don't know that it's always the necessary to do that. And that's what I was trying to get to the surface with that caller, was, is it really necessary that he do this, or would they just leave him alone? You know, if he says, I'm not going to put the flag up, so he's made his point, I'm not going to do this, and if they're going to leave him alone, I can see that as a livable situation.
I agree.
Think I'm wrong or okay.
No, I completely agree. But if they continue to push him, then he's got to stand up and he's got to push back. And that's kind of what I was getting at.
No, then that makes sense. And I agree with you on that. So if you're being prodded and pushed and forced, that's why I asked him at the beginning of the call. I said, are you being asked to do something that's compromising your beliefs? And he said, yes. And then when I said, well, are they forcing you to do it? He said, no. So I'm with you. If they were forcing you to do that against your belief system, then I would say with you, yeah, absolutely not. I'm not going to do that. And we'll see what happens. Do I get fired? Can I get a better job in the meantime? What do I have to do? So I'm not proposing that you go silent and back down in every case. Oh. But in his case, it sounded like he had some room to maneuver without getting squashed.
And you're 100% right. And it also helps me. You know, I like to say the rosary every day and the divine chaplet, but I always try to ask the Holy Spirit to give me guidance in whatever decisions I'm going to make. So I know that if I'm doing it, it's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you are a good example of what we need more of, Tom, and that is men of integrity who are willing to stand up when the time is right and it's necessary and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I think one of the problems of our time right now, Tom, is that so many people, men and women, have been buffaloed and cowed, and they're afraid now to stand up because they're worried about being called names or worse. And I can understand why people are fearful of that, but that's how the other side wins. If people like you and I don't say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go along with that, then they just continue steamrolling.
Well, Patrick, you as well are a man of that character, and I thank you for all that you do, and God bless all you're doing and your work and future endeavors.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that very much. And the feeling's mutual. Let's go to Anna now in
Miami. You like me.
Hi, Anna. Did I catch you unprepared? Welcome.
I'm sorry.
That's
hi,
okay.
My name is Anna. Real quick, a few words that I wanted to say to the gentleman. At work, I'm a school teacher, but that's my backup degree. I was in mental health for years, so I was a counselor at the school where I work at, and for about 10 years. So budget cuts made me go on my backup, so fine, I'm happy. I love literature, and there I am. Mm-hmm. Now, when the person retired and I now had, you know, wow, I can go back into that role, my boss, my principal, came up to me and said, I know it's in your heart. You know, look, this is opening now. You can come back as a counselor or whatever. And I took the chance to say no, because, in fact, in my current department, I don't have total seniority. But okay. I figure, you know, God doesn't forsake his children. I'll have to trust in him. And I said no, and I stayed in the classroom. And the reason was because I was going to continue to be, you know, from that other person, the liaison for Pride and LGBTQ and all that movement that's out there. So I had to be like the, you know, attend all the workshops, promote them, encourage people to attend them, you know, and meet with families, you know, also that okay. children who were questioning and all that. So I said no because I couldn't do it. And I'm going to say to you, I didn't say why. I did tell my boss I will have to pray about it because I pray for every decision.
What is it they're asking you to do? What do they want you to do?
To take over the role of the counselor because that person was now leaving and be the liaison for this Pride movement and the LGBTQ. And
Could you do the counseling job without having to be the liaison?
Here's where my point goes. I suppose I can refuse to show the flag, and I could, you know, say, well, I'll do the counseling, but that would mean that if I have parents come to me with a child that is questioning, then I'd have to encourage them to go to support groups because your child has made this decision or has been thinking about this, so you have to support them, and here's some numbers that you can, you know, I couldn't bring myself to do that.
Okay. And that would be
so that
even
got
in the counseling, even in the act of counseling a student, they might call upon you to do things like that are independent from being the liaison to the Pride group, right?
Right. I mean, you still do the counseling job, but in that, I know there's a whole big thing where you have to attend workshops and then come back, you know, and at our faculty meeting, share and promote it. I get, you know, I can't sell you something I don't believe in.
Right.
So
can you
do
your job and then and just simply demur when those offensive things come up? Just say, I'm not going to do that. Can you say no and still keep your job?
Well, here's where this is kind of the things I was thinking about when I made the decision. You can, but principal, I don't know about other companies. I don't know about other private sectors, but in schools, principals have a lot of power. And you so much as rub them the wrong way, they will find a reason
sure.
to say your position is surplus. I think you're wearing too many hats. Right. You know, this and that's going on. This is for your best interest. No.
So how did it work out for you? Did they give you the chop or what happened?
They did not give me the chop. I stayed in the classroom. I am in this world. I'm not of this world. And I know we have to preach differently to different people. So I did not say, you know, because of my Christian values, I'm not going to do this, because they're going to turn around and say, well, you don't have to do it all the time, and, you know, whatever. So I said, and you know, I prayed about it in my best interest. I have come to a decision that I'm going to stay where I am. And that's all I said. I didn't have to, you know, when you say less, less is more. And let them think whatever they want to think, because.
So are you now flying under the radar? You've got your job and they're leaving you alone? If that's the case, it sounds like that was a good move.
Yes, in the sense that he retired. You know, this boss retired.
Okay.
And so that's no longer on the table. But for the rest of the 3 years he was there, was I kind of on eggshells and I just went in, did my job, and, you know, that's it. And I was in a leadership position, too, where I had to, you know, go to meetings where they were there. Was I his favorite? Absolutely not.
I can only imagine. Well, I bet you, Anna, there are people who work where you work who admire you and are glad that you took some courageous steps. That's a good example for other people. God bless you. Thank you. I'll be right back. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We're going to California, we're going to South Dakota, and Texas, and New York, and Texas, and New York.
I like the harmonica part. Yeah.
You like all the parts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Washington and Oregon.
Love it.
And Washington. We're going to South Dakota.
Sounds like he's naming all the places where Relevant Radio is.
That's exactly right.
That's like a Relevant Radio commercial.
And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Well, I don't know about that. That is the gift that keeps on giving. What can I say? 888-914-9149. By the way, when I talk from time to time about some details about COVID, for example, some people, they get hot under the collar. You know, you're misleading people. You're confusing people. You're telling people not to wear a mask. No, I'm not. But I am pointing out that there's a lot of conflicting information. So much so that Reuters has just come out with an article on this very topic. Came out today. Reuters, as Americans navigate conflicting COVID-19 mask advice, everyone is confused. So if you hear me talking about this stuff and pointing out some of these inconsistencies, you know, get off my case, because it's not me who's trying to misinform anybody. I'm just trying to point out that there's a lot of, as Reuters itself says, there's a lot of conflicting information. So here's what they have to say in this article that just came out. A COVID-19 surge ignited in parts of the United States by the highly contagious Delta variant and vaccine hesitancy has led to new mask mandates and deep confusion among some people about which guidance to follow. In Los Angeles County, leaders have reinstated an indoor mask mandate even for the fully vaccinated. Officials in Houston and New Orleans also raised coronavirus alert levels this week and told people to mask up. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis said on Thursday, children will not be required to wear masks in school there this fall, arguing that, quote, we need our kids to breathe. Hours later, the White House press secretary told reporters, if I were a parent in Florida, that would be greatly concerning to me. Everyone is confused about what they should be doing, said Daniel Blackshear, a 20-year-old in Santa Monica, California, who was infected twice last year. I don't understand why we have to suddenly wear a mask again. The county sheriff in Los Angeles County said his department will not enforce the mask measure. Conflicting advice from officials at city, county, state, and federal levels of government come as hospital staffs in the harder hit states with lower vaccination rates are sounding the alarm about their systems being overwhelmed. And it just goes on and on here, and it just details examples. Some of it politically based, some of it's, you know, just from people who are in positions of influence as health directors and other things. And it's just a mishmash of conflicting information at all different levels. And Reuters is pointing it out. So I offer that to you for your consideration, because, as I say, sometimes if people tune in and they hear me pointing out some of these things and then they get angry and say, well, he's just confusing people and he's misleading people. No, I'm not. I'm reporting on what different places and different entities are saying. And yes, that is confusing in itself when you've got contradictory information. Or spokespeople saying, you know, you got to mask up, you got to wear the mask, and then they get caught not wearing a mask in public places, around people, etc. That kind of thing. That's all. And if you want to read that article, we'll get a link to that for you on the show Twitter feed, which you can access by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go to Jerry now in Chicago. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Patrick. You've had mentioned this in the past about natural immunity, and looks like the data shows that natural immunity is every bit as effective, if not more effective, than vaccine immunity. Mm-hmm. What I'm stunned is, and they're all talking about these vaccine passports and mandatory vaccinations for people who are unvaccinated. I don't even hear in the conservative press, much less the mainstream media, mention anything about why are people who have natural immunity required to be vaccinated? The data show that natural immunity is every bit as effective as vaccine immunity. Mm-hmm. And why should we expose these people to the risks of the COVID vaccine? And it's particularly concerning with a lot of college students have already had COVID, and we know the vaccines, the younger you are, it seems like you're more in danger of getting myocarditis or some other disease, some other serious adverse health event from the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so just like to have your comment on that.
Well, I have wondered myself why there seems to be very little discussion publicly about those who have contracted COVID and recovered from it. And we're talking about many tens of millions of people, you know, perhaps maybe 100 million people in this country anyway. And as we just heard earlier in the show, one government official pointed out that, this is Lena Wen, and she was referring in this interview on CNN to roughly 50% of the U.S. population having been vaccinated. Okay, I don't doubt that number. So let's say 50% of the roughly 330 million people in this country have been vaccinated. Well, it seems to me, based upon what I've seen, that there is at least something approaching maybe half of the people in this country who, whether or not they've been vaccinated, they have contracted COVID. So to your point, I myself have found it odd that there is very little by way of, you know, scientific guidance, as much as I now hate that word. I can't escape it. There's no scientific guidance on what about all the people who have a natural immunity? What about them? They don't seem to talk about that. At least I don't see much discussion about it. And I find that curious. And the reason, if I had to guess, I think the reason that we hear very little about those people, which is maybe approaching about half of the population, is because if it were told publicly, you know, well, you already have immunity from the virus, at least for a time anyway, you don't need to get vaccinated, then that would disrupt the narrative of everybody has to get vaccinated. So I'm just trying to put two and two together, Jerry, and try to figure out why is there little discussion about this. I think that may be the reason why. Because if they highlight that, then half the population will say, oh, okay, well, I don't need to get vaccinated. And that would frustrate the goal to get everybody vaccinated. And this is why Dr. Lena Wen, for example, is pushing so hard for a vaccine mandate, which would essentially say, it doesn't matter whether you've gotten COVID, doesn't matter whether you want to get vaccinated, it doesn't matter, you've got to get vaccinated. That seems to be the now, things are sort of funneling down to that. And I think eventually, she's right, I think eventually we'll get to that, where it doesn't matter for any reason, you still have to get vaccinated, which I find troubling, but I think that's where things are headed. So that's my theory as to why we don't hear much said about that.
I agree. But I'm also troubled by it because that's not following the science or the data. If you know, we don't know how long natural immunity is going to last. We don't know how long vaccine immunity is going to last. But also there was a study done by the Israel, I don't know if you saw it, Ministry of Health, mm-hmm. that showed it was 6.7% more likely for someone who's been vaccinated to have a breakthrough infection with this recent Delta variant than someone who had natural immunity and didn't get vaccinated.
And you know, that leads to another question.
Silence.
Yeah, that leads to another question. What about people who have both? You know, what about somebody who's got the antibodies naturally from having had COVID and then they get the two doses of the vaccine? Does that put them in any greater risk or less risk? And, you know, I'm not hearing much about that. I did cover how Boris Johnson, the prime minister of the UK, how he had to go into isolation because even though he had COVID and he recovered, apparently he had a bad case of it, but he recovered. And he also is all vaxxed up, so he's good to go on that score. And he happened to be in the presence of some people who tested positive for COVID, so now he's in isolation. And the question arises, well, why? I mean, why would you have to do that if you not only had it and you have the natural antibodies and you have the vaccine? Why would you have to do that? And I haven't heard any good answers to that question yet. Have you?
No. And the only other thing I would make is no one's saying that natural immunity is 100% effective, and no one is saying vaccine immunity is 100% effective. And, I did find it interesting in your lead into at least my discussion. You mentioned the kid that got COVID twice is wondering why he had to wear a mask.
Right.
I'm wondering how he got it twice.
So, right. So apparently it can happen. Yeah, thank you. Apparently it can happen. I don't know how prevalent that is. He may be a real outlier. I don't know.
Exactly.
But that's a valid question.
Yeah, and you don't know if he had it asymptomatic. You know, so all that, you know, it's really hospitalizations and deaths. That's what we should be concerned about. And hopefully no one gets long-term effects from COVID.
Indeed. Well, thank you for the call, Jerry. I'm glad you raised your voice on this topic. Thank you. Good talking to you. If you're interested, CNN has got an article about COVID. How worried should vaccinated people be about breakthrough infections? So this is CNN. Coronavirus infections are on the rise again in the United States, while more than 99% of deaths are among those unvaccinated. Anecdotal reports abound of breakthrough infections or cases of fully vaccinated people who still test positive for COVID-19, including several New York Yankee baseball players. So how worried should vaccinated people be of contracting COVID-19? If you're vaccinated, you are still able to transmit coronavirus to others, such as young children too young to get the vaccine themselves. That's a question they're asking. Does the more transmissible Delta variant change the equation? And what precautions should vaccinated people still be taking? And guess who they quote? They quote the former queen of Corpse Mountain, the former head of Planned Parenthood, Dr. Lena Wen. She's the CNN medical analyst. And if you're interested in her medical expertise and what she says on the issue, you can read this article. We'll get a link to it for you on the show Twitter feed, which you can access by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. So Dr. Wen says to the question, if you're vaccinated, can you, you know, do you still have a problem? Are you still potentially vulnerable? And she said, yes. Here's what the COVID vaccines do. First and most importantly, they protect you very well against severe disease. That's the key. This is a disease that has taken the lives of over 600,000 Americans and millions of people around the world. If you get the vaccine, you know that you are very unlikely to become severely ill to the point of needing to be hospitalized or to succumb to the disease. According to federal health officials, 99.5% of deaths from COVID-19 are now among the unvaccinated. That is a real testament to the power of vaccines. So there's more to it, but I mean, you know, this is from a recognized medical expert, even though I strongly disagree with her view on abortion, but that's beside the point here. The source is CNN. So we're not quoting from some fringy organization or anything like that. And these are examples of the questions that we're raising here is, you know, what exactly is the risk for somebody who has been vaccinated? Why is Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the UK, why is he in isolation right now? He had COVID. He's got the natural antibodies. He's been vaccinated fully. And now he's back in isolation. And this is the question that I think everybody is asking, and that is, when will this end? Will this end? Will it ever end? Will anything ever get back to normal again, or will we always, forever and ever, amen, be a civilization of mask-wearing, frightened people who are not allowed to talk to each other or see each other's faces and have to stay indoors and socially distance? Will this ever end? We'll see. And they, you know, they're saying, and I'd like to believe it, hey, if we reach herd immunity, that's when it will end. And if everybody gets vaccinated, so let's just say tomorrow everybody's vaccinated, I'm not sure that it will end. You know, and that's a troubling thought, because then it leads to questions like, well, why won't it end? What's the reason or the reasons behind it? And those are things that I don't think are entirely clear yet. Let's go to Jeff in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, hi. How you doing today, Patrick?
I'm well.
Well, sorry, I wasn't supposed to say that, but because this is going to take a little bit of time. But you guys are rocking today, based on what I'm going to tell you to ask. There's two parts to this, but okay. I'll work through them as fast as I possibly can. I heard a radio program the other day, and it was rather fascinating. And it deals a lot with what you and Drew have talked about, transhumanism. Mm-hmm. With regards to the vaccine, you are hitting it on the head today. Why are they pushing this vaccine so much with respect to the fact that you guys talked about people that have had COVID? Why do they have to have the vaccine? In this radio program that I heard the other day, they started talking about the vaccine and what and how it was created. Ironically, it has 6 proteins, 6 electrons, and 6 neutrons. That said, 666. You can kind of see where I'm going to go with this.
I do. I don't know if I want to go there, Jeff, because adding up, let me put it this way, Jeff, with all due respect, I'm sure you're a great guy, but adding up the number of neutrons and protons and those and coming up with the number 666 means absolutely nothing one way or the other about any vaccine. There's no correlation between that and the number given right in the book of Revelation.
The irony behind it is it's magnetic. It has to be frozen, the vaccine. So then when it's injected into you, it becomes active. There's actual cases where it's like, what's going on? And I'm sure you've heard those things.
I saw a lady at a meeting who said, I am now magnetic, and she put a, looked like a house key up to her neck. And I don't know if she was perspiring and it stuck for that reason, but when she tried to put it back up there, it wouldn't stick to her. But she was claiming that she had been magnetized by the vaccine.
That seemed extremely outlandish. That's what you and Cyrus were kind of talking about earlier, Jeff, with tracking. And that's the weird part about this, is the fact of that. Regardless, though, it's them pushing this. And then in this radio program, they started talking about, this is up your alley, chapter 2 of Daniel and chapter 17 of Revelations. And they start talking about, here, this is the second half, about the Whore of Babylon and giving birth to Satan and... this is more up your alley. But the weird part about it is the UN. Now, in those parts, they talk about the 10 nations in Revelations or whatever, and the fact of where they're not doing well in Europe. But the point is that the UN building looks exactly like the Babylon.
Yeah,
and
I have to interrupt, Jeff. Jeff, I have to interrupt. I really appreciate your sincerity. I'm sure you're extremely sincere, and I'm sure you've done a lot of reading about this. But I don't for a moment accept the premise that because the shape of the United Nations building, which was built, what, in the 1960s, maybe, that because that might resemble somebody's rendition of something. These are ways of trying to arrive at a conclusion that are just simply invalid. It's an invalid methodology to try to arrive at some conclusion based upon things like that. I really, really urge you not to worry about those things, because they're just going to make you anxious and unhappy, and it's a completely bogus way of arriving at it. With all due respect, Jeff.
I understand, Patrick. Thanks.
Yeah.
But it just was weird where there's all these coincidences, if you want to call them that, mm-hmm. about their 676 seats in the parliament of the UN, and seat 666 is vacant.
Yeah.
And then they
but
talk
that means
about...
Nothing. But that means nothing. It means nothing. Let's say that the letters of your name added up in Latin or Greek. Let's just say Latin. Let's say mm-hmm. that the letters of your name added up to 666. It means nothing.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anything one way or the other about you. You're not the Antichrist.
Okay.
If you know what I'm saying, this is something that numerology people have played with endlessly, and they always get it wrong. And
yeah.
You're a good guy. You're a good guy, and I don't want to see you get tangled up in stuff that's just going to lead you nowhere, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate it, Patrick.
All right, Jeff. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to my point. I realize it's not maybe what you wanted to hear,
yeah.
but thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. You have a
You're welcome. Thank you. Let's see. That's probably the point where we have to take a break. So let's do that. We'll come straight back. Phone calls straight ahead right after this. If you've been holding, thanks for your patience. I'm coming to you right after this quick timeout. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
For your good-to-know file, before we get back to the phone calls, the Jerusalem Post has an interesting article. The headline is 20% of Americans believe microchips are inside COVID-19 vaccines. Some 20% of Americans believe this conspiracy theory that microchips have been planted inside COVID-19 vaccines that millions of people have already taken worldwide, according to a study by YouGov and The Economist. Despite a lack of any evidence to support this claim, a poll concluded overall that 15% of Americans said this conspiracy theory was probably true, while another 5% said it was definitely true. And it goes through kind of a breakdown by age. 27% of people ages 30 to 44 support the theory. Some 14% of Democratic voters support the theory, compared to 32% of Republican voters. They talk about false content on social media, and they give some examples of this. So the social scientists are studying the ways in which people are reacting to this information. And, you know, 20%, it's a minority, that's for sure, but it's a significant minority of Americans who have become convinced that there are microchips being placed in the vaccines. I absolutely do not believe that. And I've said that many times on the program before. And you should not believe that either, but many people still do. So that is an article that you can read if you want to see the study itself, see the poll. It has a link to that. And you can find this from the Jerusalem Post by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go to Kristen now in Colfax, California. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Patrick. I was tucking in my two boys the other night, and we say our prayers before bed. And at the end of our prayers, my 8-year-old son said, "Thank you, Jehovah. Good night." Mm-hmm. And so I asked, "Where did you hear that?" And he said his grandfather told him that that is God's name, Jehovah. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to ask where the Catholic Church stands on that, because I tried to do a little research, and it's in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. His grandfather is a Jehovah Witness, so I wanted mm-hmm. to know, like, a good response back, too. Like,
yeah.
I've reassured them over and over that we're raising our children in the faith, but then he seems to keep, like, bringing that up with my children.
Right. Well,
so
I'm sure,
why
I'm
don't
sure he
we
does.
Say that?
Okay, we don't yeah. say it because that's not the name of God. We don't for sure know the name of God. We do know what the vowels are in Exodus chapter 3, where we see Moses meeting God in the form of a burning bush. And when Moses asks God, "What is your name?" he says, "I am who am," or "I am that I am." And in the Hebrew, which did not have any vowel markings, the consonants are what we would say transliterated into English as YHWH. So the Jews were very intent upon not pronouncing the name of God, not even for religious reasons. In fact, even to this day, religious Jews use the Hebrew word Hashem, which means the name. They don't even say God. They'll just say Hashem in place of God. That's how careful they are not to speak his name. But even they don't know the actual name of God, because over time, and because there were no vowel markings, it was not to be pronounced. That's how sacred the name of God is. So later, when you start seeing, for example, the Masoretes, who were the Jewish scholars who did a lot of work on translations and copying of the Torah and other Old Testament writings, that's when we begin to see kind of a use of vowel markings, and even later than that, when we start seeing vowel markings. So they would intentionally put the wrong vowels in. They would use maybe the vowels for another word like Adonai and insert those vowels in so that it couldn't be pronounced correctly. So long story short, and this is by way of German as a modern language, and even before it became a modern language, the way of pronouncing it as Jehovah sort of grew out of that linguistic family. And that was latched on to by Charles Taze Russell, who was the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses. And he believed that this was the actual name of God. And so the New World Translation of the Bible that the Jehovah's Witnesses use, you see that word Jehovah over and over and over again. And it's usually a mistranslation of the actual text, which just simply says God or sometimes Lord. They will insert the word Jehovah because that is a stylized way of pronouncing the YHWH, the Tetragrammaton. So that I could probably stop there because you probably would be too bored if I went further. But that's the genesis of all this. And this is why, especially for Jehovah's Witnesses, they're trained to believe that that is the actual name. So they use it at every step. And this is why your father-in-law, I guess, is saying that to your son. Now, I'll add this. It's not bad or evil to refer to God as Jehovah. It's not as though it's sinful to refer to him as Jehovah, as long as people recognize that that's not his actual name. That's a human way of trying to pronounce this tetragrammaton, and that's all it really is. It doesn't connect with the actual name itself. Now, you asked about resources. I would refer you to Catholic Answers. There are many good articles that have been written in some tracts as well. I forget now if I wrote some of the Jehovah's Witness tracts. I might have back when I was at Catholic Answers, but those are all accessible and they're free. If you go to Catholic.com, right. You can type in the word Jehovah. It'll pull up some articles and things. Type in Jehovah's Witness. It'll bring some other things up for you.
Thank you. That was a great answer. What would your answer be to an 8-year-old little boy? Like, how would you explain that to an 8-year-old?
Yeah, I would say maybe to kind of bring it down to his level, say, well, honey, that's not God's actual name. There are people who believe that, but they're mistaken. And I know you love your grandpa and he loves you and he's just trying to, you know, be loving with you. But as long as you understand that that's not God's real name, it's not a problem if your grandfather says that Jehovah loves you. I mean, that's not a problem. It's okay. Kind of sweet, actually.
And then in prayer, okay. And Jesus himself prayed to God the Father, calling him Abba, mm-hmm. like Daddy. So we've done that in prayer. I told my son mm-hmm. he could call him Abba, Father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if that's like a... All right. Yeah. Well, thank you. I really respect you and respect
Thanks, Kristen.
The work
thank
that
you.
You do. So thank you.
I hope this is helpful to your little guy. Thanks for the call. Let's go to John now in Reno. Hi, John.
Yeah.
Whoa. I don't know what's going on with John, but let's get John sorted and we'll come back to him. We'll go now to John in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Hello, John.
Hi. Good morning. You know, as long as we're thinking about him, I don't think he cares what we call him, as long as we are taking the time each day to pray, to open up the word. I called because of the previous caller. I worked for the government for many years. Okay. And, you know, we were taught politics, you cannot get involved in it. And I don't know who circulated a ballot to make June homosexual month, but as far as the government was concerned, when I worked for it, we could not get involved in anything, period. So for companies, which
times
are private,
have changed.
Which are private, you know, they can do what they want. But the point is, the famous Lutheran pastor, Martin Niemöller, I hope I always say his last name correctly, he had the great poem, First They Came. Mm-hmm. And the illustration was that if you stay silent, incremental change will happen, and it will happen in such a way that you will wake up one day and you will not realize what has happened. And you can look at how in the last decade things have accelerated because people did not speak up. Now, I can understand the point you're making. Don't make waves, especially when you're working for somebody else. But then it comes to the point, when do you speak up and when do you push back before right. you are inundated?
Well, you know, I did raise that very point, John. I said that if they ask you to do something that you cannot do in good conscience and you say, no, I'm not going to do that, and they leave you alone, then great. They leave you alone, you fly under the radar. If they ask you to do something that you in good conscience can't do and you say no, and then they say, well, you have to, then you make a fuss. Then you say, I'm not going to do it. You can't make me. And then either they fire you or you find another job or they make your life miserable. But I absolutely believe that there's a time and place when you have to stand up and do that. But not every situation requires that. That was the distinction I was trying to make with that caller.
No, no, you made an excellent point. I guess I'm looking at a bigger picture because I'm always looking at the genesis, the seed. Where does it all come from? Mm-hmm. And when I see it in different churches, because I attend many different churches, I was raised Catholic, but I've been the Methodist, Baptist, Congregationalist, you name it. And it's amazing what's happened to some of these churches, how political they've gotten.
Yeah.
And the flock just sits there, and everyone is afraid to be labeled this made-up word, homophobic. I mean, I don't know how man could fear himself, but that's the word. And God forbid the word racist. I mean, they just sit there like mm-hmm. like little sheep huddled
people
together.
We
cannot speak up.
People have been intimidated because they know that the Twitter mob will come for them. They know that something that they said 20, 30 years ago can get them deplatformed or fired or lose their teaching credential or any number of things. And it's this, the tactics of intimidation. It's basically fascism. That's all it really is using intimidation and, if necessary, violence to silence your political opponents. That's what they're doing now. That's what the left is doing. It's all about the fascistic silencing of opponents. And that's why
I think so many
people are quiet.
Isn't that amazing? Then they have that Antifa, which is just the antithesis of what they say they are. But, you know,
exactly.
it's the famous...
John,
pastor,
I got to press on. Can you summarize your point in a sentence or two?
It's just that I think we should read that poem again. You know, First They Came For, because eventually it's going that way. Now, I guess in the end, the ending isn't very good until Jesus comes and rules again. But we're going to have that revelation someday.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if it's futile to even push back because of that as a Christian.
I hear you. And some days you wonder, you know, is this doing any good? So the approach I try to take, and all of us here at Relevant Radio do, John, is let's speak the truth in love for as long as we have breath in our body, or breath in our bodies, rather, and as long as we've got the opportunity to do so. Just try to push back that way. Speak the truth in love and let the chips fall. I'm glad you're listening, John, and thanks for calling. Let's go to Richard in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Hi, Richard.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call because
sure.
I know you're running out of time. Real quick, I'm one of the millions of Americans who are totally frustrated because nobody talks about us. I'm the guy that had the virus back in March of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks ago, I was tested. I still have antibodies, and it's like we don't exist except for Relevant Radio and Ron Paul. Nobody talks about us. And they refer to the unvaccinated. I know they mean me. But I have the antibodies, and I'm not going to get it vaccinated. I'm 82 years old, and I've had this thing, you know, these antibodies, and they're still strong. So what's a guy to do?
Nowadays.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
I would love them to say, people who are like me have the antibodies, the natural antibodies, because we had the virus and we still have natural antibodies, should take the vaccine because. But nobody talks about us. We're not there. We don't.
Yeah, well, you heard me talk about it today, so I'm glad that you acknowledge
that you're here. Oh, yeah, you guys talk about it. Relevant Radio, and maybe occasionally Fox News might talk about it, and Ron Paul's always talking about it because he's one of us.
Well,
what are we to do?
That's timing for you, Richard. Well, hang in there. Stay healthy. We'll keep trying to speak the truth in love, and we'll touch upon these topics as we can. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. I look forward to being with you again soon, and until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.